This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Calling Grass Nation, we are conducting an audience survey at gum.fm/touchgrass. And we want to hear from you so that we can keep making content you love.
You know this. We know this. There are ads on our podcast. Mm-hmm. We want to improve that experience. But in order to do so, we need to know a little bit more about you, our audience. This survey is quick, easy, and a free way to support this podcast. It'll take 2 minutes and you'll be helping us out so much by doing it.
Yes, so go to gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our audience survey. That's gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our survey. Thank you for using your precious time online to help us with our podcast.
We love you.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths but have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
You've got mail.
Emily's Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Millie and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this podcast, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so you can go do literally anything else.
Anything else. And if you like what you hear today and want to hear some more, we got a Go Touch Grass Patreon already up and running with a bunch of our test episodes, mini trending topics, a weekly newsletter, and our spinoff series, Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past. Our recent episode, because of Memorial Day, we took a little breaky. Mm-hmm. And our recent episode is Being Dad, which we recorded in January of this year.
But is evergreen
because it famously, the whole debacle happened famously on January 5th, 2021.
Which is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But life is like that.
Life is like that sometimes. So if you liked the episode we released last week in the feed and you want to get more, it's all up on the Patreon, y'all. But today, we have an amazing guest with us today. We have such a funny friend. He's a comedian, an actor, and a musician who you know from the D&D podcasting sensation, Rude Tales of Magic. But he is also my wedding date twin.
Elise brings this up every time we say, anyone says anything, Tim.
It's an interesting point. It really is.
Who are you?
It's Tim Platt.
Yes,
Tim Platt. My wedding date twin. We got married on the exact same day, and we also used the exact same boutique hotel for our guests.
Yeah, I think what you got to understand about how cool it is that she keeps bringing this up, Millie.
Sorry. Tell me again.
Well, because I think we had like seen each other at a few parties over that summer, or like earlier that year, and I started like, oh, we have the same
date. Like post-pandemic.
Yeah, so it was first time seeing people again. Oh, we have this date. Oh, weddings. Oh, so we were like starting talking about it, and then we were surprised that we were using the same hotel. So the entire weekend, it was, this was not the right reference, but revolving doors of you know.
And at the end of the night, after both our weddings, we ran into you and your wife, and we debriefed.
That's true. We did do that.
We did debrief. So August 28th, 2021.
Guess you had to be there. No. Yes, that is a cool fact. Now, it does feel like, what is that Anne Hathaway movie where she has a wedding the same date as her?
Bride Wars?
Something like that.
Oh, Tumble Into Love.
No, that's not. Are you that's sure? not it. No.
I think it's Bride Wars.
It's Bride Wars. With Kate Hudson and Anne
Hathaway.
The one
where she gets she does a fake tanner and she looks all crazy.
Yeah. Tumble Into Love.
You're
talking about a Lifetime movie that is about a gymnastics girl falling in love on Christmas.
That's true.
What we're talking about is not that.
It was the Lords of Leapin' who she fell in love with.
Yeah, okay. That's the Christmas one.
Yeah, she tumbles into an advent calendar, falls in love with one of the Lords of Leapin'.
Exactly.
This easily could be a Hallmark Christmas film. And I did recently get my first audition for a Hallmark Christmas film of the season. And I can't say the name of it, but it's so hilarious and the premise is so insane. And
I really hope
I book the quirky friend who doesn't like Christmas.
I can see. I think you'd be great at that. I really do.
I saw it and I said, I could do it.
You could do it. If anyone can, it's you. Tim can't because I feel like he'd love Christmas.
Tim gives I Love me? Christmas.
Oh, I could definitely be in a Hallmark Christmas movie.
You could be in a Hallmark Christmas movie, but you'd be the guy who loves Christmas.
Yeah, you would be helping people have Christmas cheer.
Yeah.
Come on, everyone. Why do we have to fight all the time? This is the one type of year when we can put our differences aside and be together.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly right.
And he booked it. Yeah, and he booked it.
Yeah.
Okay, Rude Tales of Magic is a hugely popular podcast and has been going on for such a long time. So please tell people who, again, this podcast is for everybody. So not, you know, maybe people who don't even know what D&D is.
Yeah.
Which is Dungeons and Dragons. So tell us a little bit about what the podcast is. And, like, it's a whole, like, world and a phenomenon of that. So it's like, there are many podcasts like yours, but yours is standout. And then also, were you a D&D player before the pod? And did you play a lot of games?
So Rude Tales of Magic is a, we play the game Dungeons & Dragons very loosely because we're all improvisers and comedians. So we play it to... like make jokes and tell stories and do improvise within character. And we've been doing this, and so it's like a madcap fantasy world. But we've had a few, and if you haven't played D&D, it is. You improvise in character and dice tell you sometimes if what you do is successful or not. I think that's a very limited way to look at it, and that's the way I choose to look at it.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it since like 2019. Branson Reese is the DM, or has been the DM, which means he sort of like guides the story and does a bunch of the characters. And we had one long campaign that was basically 70 episodes that ended earlier this year. We then just did a shorter campaign that was about 12 episodes.
And it's like you guys play the same characters for the whole campaign?
Pretty much. I mean, there's room to space in and out. But you get to have, as like an improviser like you guys, to able to be in character for that long, it's just cool. You don't get to do that unless like you're on a sitcom or something. So like that's been really awesome to be able to improvise in character comedically while always having like arc and growth and be a collaborative storyteller. So we've done a few rounds of that. And then starting next week, I don't know when this comes up, but starting next week, I am sort of like running my first campaign. So I'm stepping
into Brent's position. Congratulations.
Wow, promotion.
Thank you so much. It's called Bears the Blessing of the Obelisk.
Oh my goodness.
That sounds very you.
It's really funny. And actually pretty thoughtful.
Yeah. Oh, okay. See, this is why you can never be the guy who hates Christmas.
I'm too thoughtful for Christmas. Yeah,
earnest and thoughtful and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't really play when I was younger. I did, I was in bands. I played Vampire the Masquerade.
Ooh.
So you're still nerdy.
So still nerdy, but like I was in that way that like when you're in a band, you sort of think you're a comedian and also think you're an actor. Like that's sort of the way I like, stepped into those stuff. And didn't really play D&D until like with Branson.
Yeah.
And the whole Rude Tales crew early before we had the podcast. So pretty new to me. Yeah. It's very fun. I very much like it.
Oh, I played exactly one game and it was so much fun. And it's actually, it's literally the last thing I did before the pandemic was I met up with these, like a group of comedians I was playing D&D with. We, like news was coming in that this COVID thing was going to get crazy. We shared a cookie from Maman. We said, what do you guys think? And we were like, I don't know. And then I didn't see any of them again for 3 years. Yeah, so.
That sounds about right.
Well, for a year and a half because it was your wedding.
Yeah, August. But none of them were at the wedding.
Oh, well.
Yeah, sorry. They didn't make the cut. I saw Tim first.
So, well, it's true.
I went with you. Does D&D use a 20-sided die? Because I went with you to... Remember, I walked with you to the 20-sided die store.
Why did we have a show together?
No, we went to a Buddhist meeting together.
Right, we went to a Buddhist meeting together.
Right. We went to 20-sided die.
Right, because we were debriefing after the meeting.
We were debriefing after
and
the
I
meeting.
And I needed to get die for this podcast.
And you needed to get die for the podcast, so wow, I remember.
It's just a 20-sided die store, or is it like a gaming store?
It's like a gaming store.
Okay,
it's a
great.
Gaming
I was store, like,
but
wow.
It was called 20-sided.
Oh.
Yeah. It's called 20-Sided Store. And just to shout everyone out, the podcast, it's me, it's Branson Reese, it's Allie Fisher, it's Carly Minardo, it's Christopher Hastings, and it's Joe Lepore. Allie Fisher? Did I say Allie Fisher?
Yes.
I'm sure it's Allie Fisher.
All-star lineup.
I have to say Allie Fisher.
you did say Allie Fisher.
Thank God.
All-star lineup. All right. I'm going to get us into our topic. You said madcap fantasy world. Put a pin in that.
Okay.
Put a pin in that phrase. But before we do it, I wanted to play a little mini game with you guys. Okay. It's really more of a poll. We're going to decide something together. So this week on Twitter, a tweet was going viral that it was at Wangleberry asked, what are the load-bearing posts of our time? Mm-hmm. I.e., like, what are the tweets that, like, have truly kept Twitter afloat? The goalpost tweets of Twitter. And so I read the replies, and I narrowed it down to three. And my criteria were, it could not just be a funny post. It had to have some sort of outside influence. So with that, I did want to give an honorable mention to at FabDLT underscore, who tweeted, ew, she fuck a weed man for weed, a bitch that's fucking the text man for text.
That one is the iconic one for me. Yeah,
that's an extremely iconic tweet.
Yeah.
But I felt that it didn't quite meet the criteria. But okay. Honorable mention.
But I feel like that's a good mindset, though, for
it
people.
It is.
Because it's like, yeah, you shouldn't, you know, if you want to fuck the weed man for weed. You know, we're fucking text man for text.
Exactly. I mean, it is a perspective changing tweet.
Paradigm
for sure.
I also like it because it really focuses on men's behaviors too in a way that I think is very important. Because, you know, with the man who does nothing but text, you know, or says the right things and does nothing but text, I really think that's
At least the weed man is providing.
Exactly.
He's hunting, he's gathering.
Guys who wouldn't text me or give me weed, and I was fucking them, so.
So, yeah, again, a paradigm shifting tweet from 2017. Absolutely. Wow. And I hope she's doing well. And then my other criteria was that it had to be intentional. Mm-hmm. So that knocked out the tweet, I just told my 10-year-old daughter about hashtag RBG and she had tears in her eyes and she did the Wakanda pose and said Ruth Conda forever.
Yeah.
That knocked out Ruth Conda forever because I don't think she intended for it to be received in the way that it was received. And
Okay, because you say that was organic. That was organic.
Yes, but also it's like that tweet went mega, mega viral, but the person who tweeted it, like, her Twitter, I think, is still locked to this day. Like, she did not mean for that to happen.
Okay.
She did not. I don't think she would have tweeted Ruth Conda forever if she knew where that was going to go. So these are the three that I, based on the replies, narrowed it down to. Number one is Jabuki Young White losing his blue check by changing his page to look like it was the official FBI's Twitter and then tweeting, just because we killed MLK doesn't mean we can't miss him on MLK Day 2020.
That one is iconic.
Yeah.
That one is iconic.
You know, he lost his blue check for that. I think it spawned a lot of other blue check shenanigans.
Yeah. I feel like he did, like, pave the way for other comedians to think it's cool to, like, lose their blue check and do it intentionally.
Well, that one other guy did it with Eli Lilly and it, like, actually brought down the stock price the insulin.
That was a different one because this was when having a blue check meant that you were vetted by someone at Twitter. And what the guy with the Eli, with the diabetes medication was when you could purchase the $8 blue check. So he made it look like, so because anyone could,
But this was like, this opened the floodgates of doing that. So that is why Jabuki is on the list.
Okay.
Next, we have a tweet that we've talked about a lot on our Patreon. It's a 2016 tweet from Pixelated Boat that says, the whole internet loves Milkshake Duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. 5 seconds later, we regret to inform you the duck is racist. This coined the phrase Milkshake Duck.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And can I just say, we're going to put a pin in this because this relates to our grass hole, but...
Wow, okay. Wow.
Me and Elise are so in rhythm. And we switched a lot of topics.
Yeah, we did.
We went through a lot of things.
There were a lot of potential topics because we had a week off, so there was much discourse to be discussed.
But Milkshake Duck is iconic. It is a phrase that a lot of people use.
Yeah, have you heard that phrase before?
Yeah.
For anyone who hasn't, because you're not subscribed to the Patreon, and you should
later.
Be.
Yeah, you should be, but it
basically means when someone goes viral for something wholesome and then you find out that they are racist afterwards.
Yes.
And then finally, we have Maple Cocaine's January 2019 tweet. Each day on Twitter, there is one main character. The goal is to never be it, which coined the phrase Twitter main character.
Wow.
So between these three, what do we want to say is the most load-bearing tweet
So for all of these, because I remember seeing this on Twitter, like this this prompt, and I was seeing a lot of classic comedy tweets. Mm-hmm. You were picking ones that are like, what have changed the platform of Twitter, thus a platform of how the internet adult people like ourselves
shifted the culture.
There are so many very, very funny tweets that it's like we had to narrow the focus a little bit. Which tweets had an impact greater than the lols?
I think the main character one, because I think like, you know, Jabuki certainly started like a system of doing things. Also, like, you know, it was very powerful for him, who had so many Twitter followers and was tweeting really funny stuff all the time, mm-hmm. when Twitter was a space to look at funny stuff, which is not anymore.
I'm like, it's still there.
There's still funny stuff happening.
But like, I don't think people go to Twitter to see what jokes people are making. Do you know what I mean?
And it also used to be a place where, like, as a comedian and stuff, like, you could get, there was a time where you could get writing jobs on Twitter. Having a following on Twitter, like, really meant something. So for him to sacrifice his blue check on the altar of making one of the funniest jokes he could have possibly made. Yeah.
I think that's very cool. I think Milkshake Duck also, certainly affected our world. Affected our amazing world. Love it when there's a bird involved.
You love birds.
But it did, and it created a phrase, created a term that we know. But I think just like the simplicity of like every day there's a main character is a little, it sort of encompasses a Milkshake Duck thing.
Yeah.
And even encompasses the Jabuki thing where it's like something can happen today and you are at risk of being that person if you engage with this platform at all. Because that person can be like a person who replies to Elon, you know?
Ruth Conda forever.
Yeah.
She had no idea she was going to be the Twitter main character.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing, is that the Jabuki thing, while being funny, you have to have like knowledge of how the blue check, for it to be like valuable. And also that kind of had an expiration date, because now the blue checks, like, you actually don't want a blue check at all because blue checks are uncool now. Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't have the same weight. Milkshake Duck, I feel like you kind of have to be a little online to understand that. And then, but the main character, like, that is like the thesis or the thing of Twitter.
Yeah, like, I think the concept of the main character, most people know. I was between Milkshake Duck and main character because we talk about Milkshake Ducks so much on the Patreon, but I do feel like that original tweet, like, even if people have heard the phrase, they might not know the tweet, whereas I feel like this tweet, like, it's in the Twitter Hall of Fame for, like, coining the phrase main character, and I think people are aware that it came from this tweet.
And I would even say that happens a little bit on TikTok too. Every day there's a new main character and the goal is not to be it.
Yeah, moved to other social media platforms too, I think.
Wow, that's it. Okay, maple cocaine.
And that's also true that on TikTok you will get tweets or you'll get videos about the main character that are not the thing that they did. Or other people responding to them before you know what it is, or like their follow up to the thing before you ever get it, and then there's that little bar at the bottom that's like, do you want to know what they're talking about?
How did this person fuck up? And then you have to click it, and then you're like going through stitches because they've deleted it. And that is why we started this podcast, because we will go and do all that stuff for you so that you can do literally anything else.
Anything else, yes. So,
and speaking of something that I did for you guys,
you did it. Let me tell you.
Do literally anything else.
Wow. I will say this year I did Risa Tisa.
I did this.
You did this.
I did this because today's discourse, we are talking about the Star Wars Hotel. And specifically,
Tim's face.
Specifically, a 4.5-hour video essay created by YouTuber Jenny Nicholson that she put out to her 1.2 million subscribers, called The Spectacular Failure of the Star Wars Hotel, that has brought the Star Wars Hotel back into the conversation. Before we begin, Tim, Millie, what do you guys know about the Star Wars Hotel?
I know that there was a picture of it on Twitter, probably, that showed like somebody in one of those little like bunks. And they said, look, it's a Star Wars hotel, and you can... And that's really all I've heard about it.
Okay.
I know Millie knows.
I know about the Star Wars.
We went on a random tangent at the end of one of our Patreon episodes where we literally had said the episode is over, and then we started talking about the Star Wars Hotel, and the episode goes on for 20 more minutes while we're talking about the Star Wars Hotel.
So the Star Wars Hotel, it was an experience. It was like a 2-day sleep no more experience where people would go in and it would be like all the concierge, all the restaurant staff, everyone's in full makeup, costumes, everything, the food, the entire experience. So you really felt like you were on a Star Wars ship. You had missions throughout the day. It was very immersive. And then they take you through a back entrance to the park, and you had like a show and dinner theater. It was really cool, but the whole experience cost $5,000.
But it's basically like what you're saying. It's like a cruise where you're on it and you... There's nothing to do but activate, but like interact with the thing itself.
And yes, and that's actually a great way to put it, because that is what they were trying to mimic. The actual place that this took place was at Walt Disney World, and it is called Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser, but it was meant to be that you were on a cruise in space.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so they did different things that kind of... It was formulated a little bit like a cruise.
Okay.
Everything Millie said is correct, except it was actually more expensive. And we'll get into that. Well. But the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser was a Star Wars themed 2-night live action role play choose your own adventure experience at Walt Disney World that was open between March 1st, 2022 and September 30th, 2023. So it was only open for 18 months. It cost... low end, $6,000 per room. So just a little bit more expensive, but hey, it's another grand. You could choose one of 3 paths when you arrive. You could be First Order, Resistance, or a smuggler. And it was a mix between like an app that you would have on your phone and like in-app gameplay where you would like activate things and like you could chat with like these characters, and then also live characters that you could interact with. And the whole thing is generally considered to be like this huge L that Disney took. They put all this money into this crazy hotel and it failed within 18 months.
What year was this again?
2022
to
2023. Okay. So the hotel is back in the conversation now because, like I said, this YouTuber, Jenny Nicholson, posted this 4.5-hour video essay, which I did watch.
She watched all
on 1.5 speed. And I will say, Jenny Nicholson is very smart and very like engaging and sweet.
Not everyone can do a 4.5
No, video this essay girl thing. She put her whole Star Wussy into this.
Okay. Never.
Tim has left. That. Millie has left. The lights are off in the studio. Emma's gone.
Everyone's left.
Everyone's left. I just got an email. HeadGum has ended the podcast.
No!
But she put a lot of work into it, and I appreciated the work that she did. So it's basically this deep dive into like the history of the hotel, why it failed, and her experience attending and playing as a guest, because she did go to the Star Wars Hotel.
Did she pay for it?
Yes. So I read an interview in Rolling Stone. She paid for the trip 100% herself, but she does have 1.9 million YouTube subscribers. So like she kind of knew it was like a business expense for her. Like she knew.
Yeah,
she
could, yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, she has the money to do it, but it's not like they didn't invite her on a press trip.
No, she was not invited by Disney to the trip. So she went in pure. The video has 6.9 million views.
Yeah.
So it has gone mega, mega viral. And she worked on this video for 2 years because when she was almost done making the first iteration of it, the hotel closed down. And so she retooled everything to reflect like the fact that the hotel failed.
Because it's been closed almost a year now.
Yeah. So I think I don't know exactly when she went, but like she, you know, a ton goes into these videos anyway. So she had a version that was just basically her like talking about her experience and maybe some history of the hotel. And then it closed down and then she retooled it to make this version. And it's, I mean, 6.9 million views on a 4.5-hour long video is like, that's crazy.
Yeah, but there are people, and especially like as we talk about, as me and you have been feeling, probably Tim too, have been feeling like TV and general things and entertainment like completely fucking wane, The thing is that those people and those viewers and all that stuff, like the people who aren't watching the Oscars and all that stuff, they have pivoted to podcast, YouTube, and there are so many people who watch endless hours of YouTube. Like, yeah. They don't watch TV shows. They watch, you know, their favorite YouTube creators, and they'll watch anything that they do and stuff. So.
And that's why our podcasts have 6 million downloads. Well,
maybe Tim's.
But also behaviorally, there is a thing of, I'll put this on, I leave the room, I turn it off, I come back in the room, I turn it off. Yeah. It is sort of, not that people aren't engaging with it, because I think people are, but there is a feeling of like, when sports is on, or I could have sports on, or I could have, you know, something, I was going to say something interesting. I think sports are interesting, but you know what I mean? Like, I think there is a 4 hour long YouTube video doesn't mean people are going to watch a 4 hour movie. They're going to watch it throughout their day.
Yeah, or you could pause it.
And that is kind of like how I experienced it too, was like, with YouTube, it's like I had it on my phone, but like I could listen to it on the train coming and going. Like, so there were parts of it that I watched like a show. There were parts of it I listened to like a podcast. Like, mm-hmm. You can kind of dip in and out as you need, since it's not like there's visual elements, but it's not the most highly visual thing where like you could do an audio version. So basically in this video, she breaks down, it's in like 19 parts that she breaks down the failure of this hotel. I'm gonna breeze through them. Obviously, to go in as in-depth as she did would take 4.5 hours. Yeah. We're not doing that here. But part one is called Why Have They Done This? And her answer is essentially to capitalize on this like immersion trend in theme parks. All the Disney parks are immersive to some extent, but they were like, this is going to be the most immersive immersion of all.
And
immersion.
Those are fun experiences. Again, like,
it sounds fun.
Yeah, like, you know, our hit off Broadway Williamsburg play, Deep Down, Dark Down Deep, about the Chilean mine collapse.
Was an immersive play?
Was an immersive
play.
And it ran for a year. People like, I think now too, people like shit where you can like get off your phone and just be there and present.
Yes. Have you ever done like did you do Sleep No More or any of that stuff?
No, I missed Sleep No More. I wanted to. I like, you know, it never really pulled me that. So I feel like there's some, how do I say this? I like to play pretend a lot. Yeah. And there's something to me about, I don't like going to places where I feel like I have to play pretend like other people, or I watch other people play pretend in that way that I want to play pretend, or it feels like, oh, there's an offer for me to interact with you, but it's not equitable because I'm not the performer, you know, which is kind of a bratty thing to do, but it's like stuff
it's different because you are an actor and whatever, so.
Yeah, so there is that thing of like, I mean, it's like I'm kind of a Grinch about Halloween because I'm like, oh, we put on our costumes, but we can't play pretend in the costume. Like
Halloween Grinch, that's a character. That's a character.
I remember specifically being a kid, like dressing up as like a ninja and acting like a ninja, and people would be like, you can't act like that. I'm like, why are we doing this? And even today, I feel the same way. Where it's like,
well,
if I'm not gonna...
there's a lot of reasons why you can't act like a ninja, Tim, white man.
Sure, but, sure. Oh, wait, is that why they said that back then?
but you know, to that point, that's why, you know, cosplay and conventions and all that shit.
Ren Fair.
That's why people like, that is a thing that people like to do.
I do like Ren Fairs. I do. And I just watched the first episode of
Ren Fair documentary. Yeah, is it good? You recommend it?
I do recommend it. I think it's cool. Something's going on with its style that I want to wait until the end of the 3 parts to like talk about. But I think it's very cool and very
okay.
I literally have always wanted to go to one, and I feel like every single year I only learn about the Ren Fair the last day of the Ren Fair because people are like posting last day of the Ren Fair, and every single time I'm like, next year I will remember, but then there couldn't be a longer possible time between the day I find out about the Ren Fair and the next Ren Fair, and so it's this vicious cycle that I'm in of not going to the Ren Fair.
Yeah. And I'll just say this too, many Ren Fairs medieval times.
I have been immersive. To medieval times, and I ate an edible and it rocked.
Yeah. So exactly. Like, would you have, you know what I mean? Like, these things, like, it wasn't a bad idea. Like, idea. Yeah.
No. This just makes me think, and I hope this is relevant, but it does make me think, going to a Ren Fair and you interact with some of the people who are, you know, there in character doing their thing. And I'm always confused where it's like, I'm supposed to act like I'm normal today. And am I supposed to jump into your world where you are the knight? Or am I supposed to be like, oh my God, you're a knight? Like, I have such an impulse to straight marry these incredible performers. And I don't know how to. Well, you're like, am I supposed to just like,
I want to play with you. Both. You know? People do both.
Honestly.
But what's the best way to do it?
Well, you know.
I had an experience once where I went to an immersive thing in Salem because I was working at this summer camp. And it was me and my friend, and we brought the... You could sign up for, like, what trips you brought the kids on, and we brought, like, the 13 nerdiest kids to Salem to, like, walk around, and it was this immersive play, and this guy who was in the immersive play, I realized shortly after, was trying to hit on me, but he couldn't, like, leave character, so he was like, from whence did thou come, blah, 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 and I was like, I don't know, Wellesley, and he's like, that's a 3 days journey from here, and I was, like, so tired and working so hard, I just, like, wasn't connecting with what he was trying to do, and also again he was like pretending to be from the 1700s, so yeah. I couldn't a 1500
would
I don't
you
know,
so way. Is your regret not fucking the Salem
no
gun?
Because yeah. What happened later is then we went to a fake court case, a fake court trial for the Salem witches, and I fell asleep because I was really overworked and really tired from working in this camp, and afterwards as we're leaving he taps me on the shoulder, drops character, and goes, thanks for paying attention to the show.
Oh wow.
Right?
Oh wow. Was he gonna are you gonna stone me?
Yeah.
Are you gonna stone me?
Yeah. I
said,
oh, okay. I get what's going on here, hates women.
Yeah.
I can't even sleep.
Wow.
I can't even sleep. Wants, I was
what
tired.
What was he gonna do? Put fucking heavy clothes and push you into a river?
Yeah, exactly. See stone me, bitch. I'm tired. Unbelievable.
That's really powerful though. Thanks for paying attention.
Thanks
to this
for paying
show.
Attention to okay. The show.
That's really powerful. I like that a lot. I want. Thanks for having the good one time. Thanks for participating.
One time, and this was my chaotic. In the Millie lore, it's very well known that I was in a chaotic all women of color improv team called Affirmative Action. In one of our first shows, we did it at somebody's like house, which I get it. Now I get it. I'm like, yeah, you're at a party and people start doing improv. It's rough. Okay. But this guy, he was like texting his friend, like, this shit sucks so bad. And we saw it. And then he was trying to flirt and then all this stuff. And he goes to one of us on the train and was like, hey guys, he's like, great show, guys. And then one of my teammates were like, you fucking liar! You were talking shit the whole time.
That's cool.
Blah, blah, blah. Don't talk shit. Like, and then we found screenshots of the like, it was a whole thing. We posted it on Facebook.
Wow, you took it to Facebook.
We took it to Facebook.
That when don't she says chaotic team,
yeah, it was
wait,
chaotic.
I think I do remember this from Facebook. This is kind of fun. That's cool.
Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Discover the year's top audiobooks, podcasts, and originals in all your favorite genres. From memoirs and sci-fi to mysteries and thrillers, Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full-cast production of George Orwell's 1984. Heartfelt memoirs like Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's Lovely One. The year's best fiction, like The Women by Kristen Hanna, and Percival Everett's brilliantly subversive James. Audible. There's more to imagine when you listen. Go to audible.com/imagine and discover all the year's best waiting for you.
You know that feeling when your favorite brand really gets you? Deliver that feeling to your customers every time. Memorable moments like these are key to building your business and your brand. Klaviyo turns your customer data into real-time connections across AI-powered email, SMS, and more, making every moment count so you can continue to build smarter, more meaningful relationships with your customers. Build smarter digital relationships with your customers and make every moment count with Klaviyo. Learn more at klaviyo.com/BFCM.
Okay. Please,
we have
let's
to
talk
get to
about
part two.
Yeah, we're in part one. Of
we're
19.
Literally still in part one. Okay, part two is basically where she talks about the marketing, and this is the first thing that she says like went wrong with the hotel. So basically, she says like Disney didn't know how to market this like kind of huge LARP, basically yeah. To like a family in the Midwest who's literally never done or heard anything like that, and then also they like. They miscalibrated the audience. Like, they thought that the Venn diagram between, like, hardcore Star Wars fans and people who want to spend $6,000 in 2 days at Disneyland was like a much larger diagram than it actually was. And here's the thing that made me decide to do this topic with you today, Tim.
Okay.
She said that they tried to use TikTok influencers in the marketing. So they would have this video where they would get like a TikToker to come in and they're just doing like a dance in the middle of the Star Wars atrium or whatever. And she was like, a TikToker's audience is like a kid who can't book a room at the Star Wars hotel even if they want to. Who they should have gotten, she said, is people from the LARP community and D&D podcasters. She said, send Tim Platt to the Star Wars hotel.
Send Tim Platt.
Send Rude Tales of Magic to the Star Wars
hotel. You've been drafted. Let me tell you something, guys. If you don't know D&D, like I don't, that's when. But let me tell you, Tim's got a fan base. And when he told me people drove from Alaska to go see him perform live at the Bell House,
they did fly.
They would have gone to the Star Wars hotel.
They would have gone to the Star. Had Tim Platt been there, they would have gone to the Star Wars hotel.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, first of all, yes, I think they would. I think they would follow me.
First of all, yes, you would have saved the Star Wars hotel. It would be here today, booked up.
Well, I do think that to get real, I do think one cool thing about not just D&D, but any sort of like TTRPG gaming is that
that's
tabletop role play game, just like other systems besides just Dungeons and Dragons, which is like its own brand.
Yeah.
But like these are, when I started doing improv, I thought it was like the most egalitarian way to be creative and to perform, to perform creatively. And then over the years of doing it, I was like, oh no, there's a lot of like class issues with improv, there's a lot of race issues with improv, there's a lot of like general issues with improv communities, not to mention how self-selecting it is to be a person who wants to be on stage, you know, like, and be in front of the room. Just the type of energy it requires to like maintain a presence in an improv class, much less a community.
Yeah.
And I was like, but I do think gaming like that is a much more egalitarian way to be like, how do I start playing in character? How do I start performing? How do I start just like thinking about play in a committed way? Like in a committed way that isn't just like I'm doing theater training, you know?
Yeah.
Because people have campaigns like their own friends and they like meet up every Saturday or once a year or something like, and they have that's what you mean by the commitment.
Yeah, and
in committing to the bit during the game.
Well, also you're committing to being like not being afraid of performing, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think in improv you see a lot of people flexing their muscles and flexing their charisma and like working a room. I think we all like working a room, which is why like we thrive.
Why we're in this room with mics in front of us.
But there's amazing players and amazing improvisers and amazing performers who just they don't want that attention. They want to just have that safe space with their friends, and because of like the genre commitments, they can suddenly start being free in that way. Which I do think stuff like I'm looking at the camera at the point because the camera is the Star Wars.
Yeah, no, now you are gonna get spawned from this.
But that is like what they're asking you is like, do you want to enter? This is sort of what I was saying before.
Yeah.
Do you want to enter the strange space of play and not play?
Yeah.
Which is actually a lot more complicated than I feel like. I don't know what we is. I think it's a really complicated space, and it's very unclear what play is and how you're supposed to play and who wants to play and what it means to do that. And I think people who are doing public gaming like that are able to be like, hey, people, you know how you play in your way? You can play in your way here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with a lot more clarity than like an improviser who will like go there being like, can I get someone to react to me?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what she was saying is like, you should have gone for people who like already do this shit and like had them kind of be the ambassadors for like how this could be fun. She also pointed to two different commercials that were so poorly received that they had to be removed and scrubbed from the internet entirely. One was just this really weird, like it's like some actor who's on the Goldbergs and he's going through the ship and then this character, who I guess is like a pop star in the world of this, in the ship world, just shows up and starts singing at him, and it's really uncomfortable. And the ad was so weird that like they took it down. And then the other ad was supposed to display like different things you could do on the ship, and and it was like, you could get Chewbacca arrested.
That's the promise. That's like the
enticing. Yeah, one of the things that you could do is you could narc on Chewbacca and get him sent to fucking jail.
I mean, okay, in Disney's defense, because they are a small business and they need me, if you're a mom from the Midwest, You probably want nothing more than to get someone arrested.
Yeah. Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who better than fan favorite character since the first movies, Chewbacca.
Truly, it's like, that's who power. Is your audience to be like, and you know how everyone wants to see Chewbacca pay for his crimes. You could be the one.
Chewbacca, like, fall at the hands of the police.
What a wicked little get. All day I've been wondering when Chewbacca will get his due, and I will be the one to do it. You're like, what? Who is that guy? I don't think that guy exists. I think more people
it's crazy. So yeah, that ad literally had to be removed from the internet because people were like, what the fuck? Why would you arrest Chewbacca?
That's so funny.
So that brings us to part three, the cost. She spent $6,600 for a room for two people. So it's like technically like $3,300 a person.
But you can go to an actual cruise with, and it's like multiple countries.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's two nights, but this is actually like the bare bones room. And apparently there are all these add-ons that you could pay for, but they weren't really clear. And also the one that she did buy was this thing called the Memory Maker, where like someone would like take candid photos of you all around, but she never saw the photographer and never got the photos. And when she tried to get a refund, Disney ghosted her until she tweeted from her Twitter that has 300,000 followers, and then suddenly she got her Memory Maker money back. So it's like, okay. Another thing that she pointed out is that the cost came out before they revealed what the experience was going to be. So that put like a bad taste in people's mouth before they even really like knew what was being offered, because people were like, $6,000 for two nights, like what could this possibly be? And it's like, you want to tell them what the amazing experience is first, and then go, and by the way, it's $6,000.
Yeah.
But she also calculated it with like the time that she was there. It comes out to $2 per minute per person. So every minute that you're in the experience, you're paying $2, which leads her to part four, which she called Spirit Airlines in Space, which is basically that she said the whole thing operated on like the Spirit Airlines model of like everything is upcharged. Ugh. There's a million different upgrades, and like you have to pay for every little upgrade, which, you know, on a Spirit Airlines flight is one thing.
Because the flight's $50.
Yeah. On a $6,000 thing where you've already paid so much money, it's like that's going to leave you with a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
So then she goes to part five, which is the ship. She basically said, like, issues kind of started the moment she arrived. Basically, like, the area that this was in was kind of far out on the Disney lot, so you had to drive in, and then they give you, like, an arrival window that's staggered, but obviously everyone arrives at the beginning of the arrival window, because, again, you paid $6,000, $2 a minute, like, you want to get there, and they had no, like, loading bay or any nice thing, so it was just a bunch of people standing in the Florida heat for, like, 40 minutes until they could actually get on the, like, starship to the cruiser.
Okay.
So, like, just weird, kind of, like, not well planned out stuff like that, and then that brings us to part six, the room. The room was really small.
Yeah.
There are like larger rooms available for a bigger price, but she priced it out. And what you pay for the Star Cruiser, you'd actually get one of the nicest suites on the Disney cruise. So it's like you're paying nice, sweet price to get this tiny little room. Also, the room had like a window that had like a fake view of space on it. Mm-hmm. Cool. But that window was surrounded by LED lights that you could only turn off if you turned the entire window off. So you couldn't, like, turn the lights off but then have the space view while you slept. You had to, like, turn the whole window off. And this led to people going and bringing gaffer's tape to cover up the weird LED lights so that you could see through the space window without having these lights, which is just, again, like you're paying $6,000 to tape up your own window.
Yeah. And, again, for the Disney cruise, that's, you're going to a beach, you're having stuff, and I'm pretty sure food's included and all that shit.
This food is included, but alcoholic beverages aren't. So it is similar to a cruise in that way. She talked about the characters in part seven. She's generally positive about the characters. There's like a ship captain. There's this pop star. Mm-hmm. There's a pop star's backup singer who's like an alien girl. And then she falls in love at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's very sweet. Oh. There's a smuggler. Chewbacca's around. You can get him arrested. Mm-hmm. Chewbacca's on the loose. At large.
Chewbacca is a criminal in the series. So, he does nice things, but he does steal.
He's a smuggler. You could be on the smuggler track.
Yeah.
And then I guess you would want to help Chewbacca. And then I think you could help Chewbacca escape, but it's interesting that they chose to focus on arresting him. So then in part eight, she talks about the food, which she says, like, the food was good and that there was lots of food and it was good okay. and it was available. But it brings us, that brings us to the biggest meme of this whole thing, which is that basically on the first night, there's a fancy dinner where you're supposed to watch the pop star sing her pop song. And unless you pay for the upgrade of getting the captain's table, which is like right in front, they seat you kind of wherever. So she was seated. This image has now gone viral. She was seated behind this giant pole and she did not see shit for the entire performance.
Nice.
She could not see anything. So again, $6,000, you don't see the big thing that all the advertising was based around this lounge singer and her singing her song, and she didn't get to see any of it because she was behind
that
the pole.
That looks like, honestly, the seats I got for Bad Bunny at Yankee Stadium where I paid $700 a ticket and we were behind a fucking pole.
So can I, I'd like to pause for a second.
Absolutely.
Because I want to address a feeling I'm having that I just want to lay on the table.
Absolutely.
You know, which is, and this is, and you know, this is not the most charitable thought, but I just want to put it out there so we can all realize the waters that we're swimming in. Because I'm hearing all this stuff and it sounds bad and it sounds nasty. And also I have a thought of like, what did you expect? Like, what did you hope to get out of this? Like, you know, what was the, why did you go on this in the first place? I can't really imagine the good version of what you just said, except if it's cheaper money. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine. And you walk right in, and it's immediately good. And you meet Chewbacca, and he lets you arrest him. Yeah. And then, and then you get a great view for a pop singer that maybe you don't know of. And what are they going to do? Cover? Are they doing covers that you know, but they're space versions?
It's like a stage show. I kind of think, like, I hear what you're saying, but it's like, I think that if it's this expensive, then nothing else, nothing should be upgraded.
Yes.
If it's, if the, my thing is like, it could be just a night. It doesn't have to be 2 days. Like,
yeah.
And all that stuff. But it's like, I think of easy check-in process, spacious rooms, and not obstructed view for that price, I think is what, you know, she's, that's the good version.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and she, I mean, does. Again, if you're not into this at all, then it doesn't make sense. But if you, if you want this experience, which she said she did enjoy, like the characters and the crew and all that shit was cool, but it's just like kind of like hotel management stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think her thing is like, number one, she's a theme park person. She loves theme parks. She loves to do this kind of stuff. And she does, like, as we go through kind of the rest of the points, she does have some points where she's like, there are things that I've seen Disney do in the past that for whatever reason they just didn't do with this that I would have expected to be incorporated into this. So that kind of brings us to like the choose your own adventure aspect. So basically the way it's supposed to work is like, you have this app on your phone where you can interact with AI characters. You can interact with the characters in person. You have this like wristband thing that is supposed to kind of clock like who you're talking to and who you're building trust with. And based on that, you get put on a certain track and then you can get pulled for different experiences and stuff like that. That's how it's supposed to work. She said for her that basically none of the stuff she was doing was registering. Like none of her, you get like loyalty and trust scores with people and none of them were like, they weren't matching up to like what her actions were. She was very much trying to be on the first order track because she wanted to understand what like the villain track would be. And nothing she was doing was getting her there. So she just started being pulled into kind of random things. She said she would like text the AI characters and they would ghost her.
Wow.
So, wait, so you can interact with AI characters during this whole thing?
Yeah, so it's basically like there's like a an app. So there are people who play like the ship captain, the smuggler guy, the pop star, all of this stuff. That you physically play them, but also there's like you can technically text with them and like send messages with them and like do a chat bot with them, and all of that is supposed to get compiled into the system knowing, oh, Tim has been talking to smuggler guy, he did this activity, he's been doing this, he's on smuggler track. Millie has been talking to the pop star and she's doing this and she arrested Chewbacca, so she's on this
first.
Yeah, Millie tackled Chewbacca, took him down, brought him to the brig.
Yeah.
So, like, it's supposed to know. And basically she was saying that, like, nothing that she was doing was actually registering. And she kind of, she's had a couple of different things she thought could happen, but she said she pretty much thought it was a glitch. And she's like, for some, for a glitch to happen that's, like, basically the central conceit of the entire thing is bad.
Yeah. You know what would be fun is to be Chewbacca's either his public defender or the judge who has to like look at Chewbacca. Because then, if you're the judge, you just get to look at Chewbacca the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's when I watch the movie. When I'm watching the movie, I get to watch Chewbacca the whole time.
And that's what people want. Is they want. They want to see Chewbacca behind bars and to look at him.
I don't want to see Chewbacca in behind bars. I do want to see him in court. And I want to participate in the court proceedings. Right. Wow. Somehow.
Okay. Right. Okay, you want to be on the Chewbacca jury or judge. You want to be involved.
I want to be the public defender, if not the jury. If not that, the judge. And if not that, let's say just a character witness.
Do you think that the Chewbacca jury has to be sequestered because he's so popular?
I mean, if they could find people who could be a jury for Trump. There are people who don't know who Chewbacca is.
No, that's.
But they're not paying $6,000 for the fucking Star Wars hotels. That's kind of difficult.
So part 11 and 12 are about like the other activities you can do. There are like two main activities that you kind of have to do that are on your schedule. One is called bridge training, where you play basically like a big video game. It's like supposedly you're learning how to like man the ship, I guess.
Okay.
And then the other is this lightsaber game where you learn how to use a lightsaber, and it's kind of like fake batting practice. They shoot lasers at you and you hit them. And
okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah, she said like kind of lukewarm things about them. She was like, the video game aspect, like she basically, a big complaint she had in general was that like all the gameplay was like extremely easy for everything. So it's like, if you're an adult, it's not, you're kind of done pretty fast. And then there were supplemental activities that are like bingo and dance lessons and stuff that you would see on a cruise, which she said she found kind of charming. Okay. She was like, and those are things you didn't have to do or whatever, but she's like, I think it's fun that they have space bingo on the space cruise.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think it's cute.
And people are in character and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Then the next part, she gets into the schedule, because the schedule was super intense.
Yeah.
Every single second of your day is scheduled, and you have to be like going to different things, and then you're getting pulled into other activities. Day two, is from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. You're like doing shit on this cruise. And she said like she got so exhausted at one point that she had to leave dinner and just go back to her room and like stare at the wall just to like gear up for the finale, because she was like, I have to see the finale, but I'm so exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing relaxing about this experience, even though it is supposed to be a fun vacation.
Yeah, yeah. There's like the difference between a trip and a vacation.
Yeah.
But it's like, for $6,000, you know, it's like, could they have made this 3 days and spread it out a little bit more? And
yeah, and it's just like, early mornings, you gotta be up. Yeah, you can technically miss stuff, but you paid $6,000, so do you wanna miss the stuff, really? Yeah. So then at some point they go on an excursion to the actual like Star Wars part of the park. And the day that she went, it was pouring rain so badly that they gave them all umbrellas, but the umbrellas were so cheap that they kept springing closed and like soaking their and that is really bad, because also a big part of like the mission that you're on when you're in the park is that you walk around with your app and you scan QR codes on these boxes, and then you would do a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna be honest, this sucks.
Yeah.
and again, I don't think the good version of this is certainly not for me, but I also think that the good version is not to be wanted by anyone.
So,
you know, and should not. And maybe if you do want it, I am directly talking to you right now. You should not want that.
I feel like I'm going to push back, Tim.
Please
and say,
do. Mm-hmm.
And say that there's a version of some of this that could be fun, that, you know, all of it together is not fun. And who wants this? There are some portions of this could be fun. Like, not D&D and stuff, but there are new board games that incorporate QR codes. And
sure.
I have this board game that Marsha Belsky hates I made everyone play on my birthday, where it's like a murder mystery thing. And you have to scan, and like every witness has a QR code and interactive and stuff.
I love murder mystery shit. I love that type
but
of
like,
stuff.
I'm just saying, like, all of it together sucks, and I agree with you. Separately, there could be a way where you could do segmented parts of this that could be fun for anybody.
And she does give an example where basically, so it's like you would play these QR code games, and then like nothing would happen. Like it wouldn't, like the box wouldn't light up. Like nothing would happen. It would just say like, you did it. And she was saying that like apparently back in the day, Disney had a thing called the Kim Possible World Showcase Adventure that you could do, where you would get like a little flip phone and you would do little activities or whatever. And then there were actual, like, when you completed something, an animatronic would like pop up in the actual world of the park, or like it would make it like you could affect the real world. Tim is like, I hate this and I don't want to make an animatronic pop up.
I think it could be cool.
Also, like, I know in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, if you buy one of their really expensive wands at Ollivander's, there are certain places you can go, and if you like wave it in a certain way, like something will happen, lights will come on or whatever.
That's what, like, you wonder if I can...
there is technology where it's like if you could do the thing, and then it makes... One example she had is like you did a mission to try to turn this like engine thing off, and then the engine just didn't turn off, and she's like, well, how hard would it be for them to turn the lights off for 1 second on this engine? So she was basically saying, like, Disney has the technology to make this more fun than just scanning a QR code and doing a puzzle. And they just, for whatever reason, chose not to, even though they built this entire huge thing and could have easily built in that stuff. Like, they wouldn't have even had to add anything.
Yeah.
Yes. They clearly, they have done good versions of this before, and this is, and they have...
Yes.
Made choices to not do that for this one.
Yes.
Sure.
So that brings us to the finale. She liked the finale generally. Oh. Kylo Ren and Rey fight. There are special effects. She did point out that in the movies are really careful, I guess, to have Kylo Ren and Rey when they fight. He like only uses the force against her because they don't want to show this guy like beating this woman up.
Yeah.
But in this fight, he truly takes her head and slams it into a post.
I mean,
like, really hard.
I like that.
They fight, whatever. But that brings us to part 16, which she called Cut Corners. Basically, she says that she feels like Disney did everything that they could to cut corners on what was supposed to be this luxury experience. So again, it's like, why didn't they add these animatronics in when they could have done that?
Wait, hold up. Sorry, I have to get this out. Cut corners. Cut corners. Oh, did a square go to the gym and only work on their extremities?
Okay. Everyone's left. HeadGum has emailed again. They said, please get out of the studio.
Please get out of the studio.
I think that's pretty colorful, to be honest.
Do it right to camera so that we definitely...
Cut corners. Oh, what? Did a square go to a gym and only work on their extremities?
we try to bring white guests on sometimes. This is what happens.
But do you see how much fun was accessible just by me being me?
Yeah.
And how I didn't have to pay $6,000 for that, except maybe if you look at my
Not everybody is you, Tim.
They could try.
Not everyone has that much fun accessible to them at every moment.
They could try and they'd really enjoy it, I think.
Being you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So one line that she had that I thought was really interesting is that she says, like, she felt like the whole thing had just enough to fit in a TikTok. So it's basically like, it was enough cool stuff that you could make one TikTok about it. That would entice people thinking, oh, that's just what I saw on the TikTok. There's gonna be more stuff. Actually, there isn't any more stuff.
Oh, like a movie trailer that puts all the jokes in it.
Yeah, exactly. Like that it was enough to make a highlight reel that when you get there, you realize the highlights are everything.
That's it, there's no other good jokes.
So part 17 is called, Was It Worth It? Her answer, no.
Great.
And she also said, she made an interesting point because she was like, you know, a lot of people clown on the Star Wars hotel because she's like, well, it's a fire fest for Disney adults. It's rich people who are doing this. And she was like, you know, in my experience, the people that I saw were actually like families who probably like splurged on this in a major way. Because technically you could fit like 5 people in a room. She said she doesn't understand how that could comfortably be done, but like technically you could. And that they probably, you know, maybe like went into a little debt for it or whatever, but they're like, we're gonna give our kids this magical experience. So it's not like just like billionaires or whatever, like rich people. It's like probably, I mean, it's families who have an expendable $6,000, but it's like people who probably were like, this is gonna be our big vacation and we're gonna do this for our kids. And then you get there and it's like actually everything's upcharged and the room sucks. And
yeah, like, this doesn't seem like people who go to this are people who are being flippant with their money. It seems like they're investing in an experience that they like are excited about, as much as I've made fun of them.
Yeah, well, and it's like a thing you can do with your whole family and it's supposed to be crazy. But she valued her experience and she says she based this on like her history with theme parks, her history with Disney, having knowing the Disney price structure. She valued it at $800, basically. She said it was worth $800 per person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that kind of brings us to the end where she talks about why it failed. Basically, she attributes it to the cost. kind of hubris on the part of Disney. Like, Disney didn't have a plan to adjust this if it wasn't actually selling out. It seems like they thought it was going to sell out. They closed it super abruptly. So they announced in May 2023 that it was closing. It closed in September, and apparently that was so they could just write the whole thing off as a tax loss.
Oh, my God.
You know? And she did call out the cast members for being good. She said the cast members were, like, really, really awesome. And cast member in Disney parlance is, like, anyone who works there. Mm-hmm. It's not just, like, the actors and stuff. But mm-hmm. she said they were all amazing. But they also used the Disney College Program kids for this, which means it's the cheapest labor available to them. So, again, it's kind of this cutting corners thing. Apparently, a lot of the stuff that was in there was actually supposed to be in the theme park version of Star Wars for free. But they decided, okay, we're going to move it to this big fancy thing.
Yeah.
And in the end, she called it Disney's boldest experiment yet in exorbitant upcharges, which I thought was a very succinct way to talk about it. She told Rolling Stone she has not yet heard from Disney. There are Disney adults who are pissed because they say it's mean to leave a negative review a year after it closed because it's mean to the crew, even though she said nice things about the crew.
Wait. I want to unpack that.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So I screenshotted...
Why it's mean to
These
people lost their jobs and they're all probably laid off,
right.
And it's like, okay, you're shitting on something that's already done. Like, what is the point of doing this?
Well, but also, like, the people who were the crew, like, they probably just went to another part of the park. They didn't necessarily lose their jobs. They usually would get shuffled to a different part of the park. It's probably the actors were in a more precarious position.
Like, an actor was on TikTok saying, like, stuff like, oh man, we worked really hard on this, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but she did also say, like, I thought all the actors were good. I thought the performance was good. And I would say the thesis of it is, like, Disney fucked this thing up by being, like, greedy and corporate about it. Yeah. Not that, like, the actors or the performers weren't good or that the people who worked it did a bad job. It's like that Disney tried to nickel and dime the entire experience that was already so expensive and they ruined it.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, that was like the big pushback that she got. But for the most part, it also started this really interesting conversation about how, like, everyone says that no one has an attention span anymore. But now this 4.5 hour video has 6.9 million views.
Yeah, I don't really buy the attention span. People love, and the thing too is, like, these Gen Z or Gen A kids will watch someone on Twitch stream. These people will stream for 9 hours, 12 hours. You know what I mean? People are watching that shit, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, well
done. Don't complain
done.
About our episodes being too long, guys.
No. Well done to
Jenny Nicholson.
Yeah.
Great. You too.
Much appreciated.
And I hope that Disney doesn't try to, like, whack you or whatever.
They apparently were pissed about this.
Yeah, so, but they have not contacted her. I would say watch it if this interested you, because she goes way more in depth about stuff. Like, again, it's 4.5 hours long. And I found her to be, like, very engaging, and she made, like, really, really good points about, like, how Disney has been operating and is kind of, like, squandering its goodwill with its people, because she kind of made a larger point about how, like, things that used to be free in the parks are now all being put behind paywalls, and that this was kind of, like, the ultimate example of taking shit that they kind of used to do for free and putting it behind a paywall and then paywalling that even more.
Yeah.
Because most other parks, you can just walk into the Harry Potter section, right?
Or
you don't have to pay entry? Is that true? I don't know.
Or not. Well, like,
Harry Potter's Universal. But
it's like in previous iterations of the park, you know, it's like you walk into Fantasyland, you're in Fantasyland. But also, she did point out that a lot of the stuff that are supposed to be features of the Star Wars hotel were originally supposed to be for free in the Star Wars part of the park. And then they decided, oh, actually, let's take all this cool shit and put it in this crazy hotel.
Gotcha. Like the games, for example, that, like lightsaber game. They would probably have that in an arcade or whatever.
Right.
Or like the pop star show. Or maybe the app or whatever. That would have probably been in another iteration, but now they are paywalling. They wanted to paywall that to the Star Wars hotel. And then once you get to the Star Wars hotel, you have to pay for all these other fucking upgrades anyway.
And they're doing that all over the parks. Like, Fast Passes used to be free. Now you have to pay for Fast Passes, and you have to pay even more for certain rides on the Fast Passes. And then they oversell the Fast Passes, so you don't even really... The line is still... It's just kind of like this degradation of the experience of the Disney theme park in general.
Do you think this is connected in any way? And I'm going to wax poetic here for a second, but I think a lot about, you know, like Patreon, because I, you know, mm-hmm. I have a Patreon, the podcast is Patreon.
Very successful.
And, like, and you guys have a Patreon.
They're Patreon. Yeah.
You have a Patreon.
Ours, we're working on it.
We're working on it.
Well, I feel like, you know, I look at other podcast patrons or other artists with Patreons, and there is a thing of like, oh, I give some stuff out for free, and if you want to support me, you'll get stuff, right? And there is a line where it's like, I wonder if this is a that's been a really successful model for a lot of people, and has also been a successful way to budget one's creative output in the era of the internet, if you choose to be on the internet a lot,
yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of people who don't, just like, well, I'm going to put up cool stuff for free, I'm going to put up cool stuff for free, that rules. But I feel like this is even a version of that impulse, except corporatized, where it's like, oh, people are now conditioned to do these add-ons to get to spend more to get the good stuff. How little do we actually have to put out there before you are enticed to come in? Does that make sense?
Yes, but I do feel like when it comes to our Patreon and when it comes to like artists, I think they do put like real effort. Like, I think there's a difference between like artists who put true effort and they're like, I'm gonna make the content in here good. And I guess what she's kind of saying is like, Disney is taking stuff, paywalling it, and it's not even good.
Yeah,
not even the best. We've seen them do better for free.
Right.
And like the incentive to go experience something live, right? You can listen, you have your favorite band and you know, because now musicians are on Patreon. So it's the difference between your favorite band's song is on Spotify. You can go see them live, which has always been available, and that's a different experience, and you're connecting with them live. And then if you want to see all the stuff that they're working on, all the support them, this and that, yeah. You can do Patreon. But what's happening now is like people will see stuff on Disney Plus, which is now add-on. It's not on cable anymore, whatever. You can just buy the VHS. You have to fucking get Disney Plus to watch Encanto. And then if you want to go to Encanto Land, mm-hmm. then you got to go pay. You got to go to whatever. Yeah, yeah. And okay,
every
great.
Step.
It's
like, okay, great. I want to experience Encanto Live. But then you get to Encanto Live and it's like, okay, well, do you want to see the house? You got to pay, you know what I mean? And it's like, it is this corporate greed of like, yeah, exactly. What's the minimum, which I just think is different than artists, where it's artists is like, I fucking want to do this full time, or I want to have like a portion of my time dedicated to creating more. So I would like the people who enjoy this to pay versus like, how can we get our, like, people? We're a massive corporation who has, like, billions of dollars. How can we get people to fucking pay more and pay more and pay more?
You're right. It's less them? Like, it's less like a Patreon and more like one of those, like, gaming apps.
Yes, where it's like, buy more jewels if you want to keep playing.
Yeah,
and, like, and so, I do that sometimes.
I have bought more jewels.
I've got there's one app that I do that's, I'm not going to ever pay for it, but it's like a... It's like a habit tracking act,
mm-hmm.
but then you're a little bird, and you get dressed up and you wear different clothes.
Wow, that's made just for you. I feel like.
Yeah.
That what you just said though, I will say, did remind me that she said that in the rooms, you on the TV, you could only watch TV if you had an existing Disney Plus account. Which I'm like, you guys are fucking assholes. You can't just put the Disney movies. Plus. Like, you have to be like, are you subscribed to our Disney Plus? Like, come the fuck on. Put the Star Wars movies on there.
Yeah, that's insane.
For real?
But it's also like, I mean, I guess anybody who's paying that already but that's crazy.
But yeah, but it's also like, it's just another thing where it's like, if on the off chance you weren't, well, you better sign up for Disney Plus now.
Also, if they are not fulfilling on activities throughout the weekend, I can't think of anything more insulting than having to put in an email and code on the...
Yeah.
I don't like doing that at home. Like, this is like this is actually a huge problem, I feel like, right now, is how hard it is to put your email onto a computer or onto a TV.
Yeah.
And for them to charge you $6,000 to have to still type in your email, well, honestly, it's rather Sith-like. Evil.
Wow. All goes back. And speaking of Sith, the Acolyte comes on.
Wow.
I'm really excited.
What is the Acolyte about?
The Acolyte takes place 200 years before the prequel series.
Okay.
And it's about basically how the Dark Rose, and it's kind of like a murder mystery. It's really it's starring Amanda Steinberg.
Mm.
Amandla. Okay. So, our final segment.
Yeah, time to pivot.
Time to pivot.
Wait. Before we pivot, mm-hmm. if I can say,
yeah.
Have we come to the end of this? Do we have any final thoughts?
Yes.
We gotta get a final thought. Star Wars Hotel. Yeah, what are your final thoughts about the Star Wars Hotel?
Those weren't your final thoughts.
Well, I listen to the 19
parts.
Okay, so what is your final thoughts, Tim?
And how would you have saved the Star Wars Hotel if they had sent Rude Tales of Magic to the Star Wars Hotel?
Great. So here's my final thoughts. And I'd love to hear your final thoughts too. I'm not trying to monopolize final mm-hmm, thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to monopolize final thoughts. So big thing. This is like an experience that isn't for me, so it's hard for me to turn off the like why thing in it. But I recognize that there's plenty of reasons why, just not for me. But my big hearing that you have to plug in your email and password probably to get that I think breaks this whole thing open to me, where mm-hmm. it's disrespectful and like quite cruel.
Yeah.
I find that quite cruel to mm-hmm. ask someone to put it in there. And I think that entire experience is quite cruel, especially when there's a promise of like fandom is about love ultimately.
Mm. Yeah.
And fandom is about childhood a lot, and it's about community and about all those things together. And I think it is, I mean, I'm not, you know, covering new ground here, but I think Disney doing that is quite cruel and quite cold-hearted, and I think people can have their years ruined by going on stuff like that.
Yeah,
by entering into experiences like that, especially when you lose autonomy. Like, this is the thing I was talking about before about like interactive play, which I like. You do lose autonomy. And that's a big ask, and that's a big indulgence to be like, yeah. I'm going to let you play around me. I'm going to pay you all to play around me, and I am limited to what I can do. That's like fucked up, I think. And that's bad play in my brain. It's bad play. Yeah.
And it's just greedy of them too.
Yeah.
And exploitive. I would say for me, I don't think anything is like, I feel like the price could be cheaper, and also like, or they could make it like a medieval times kind of thing where it's like it's this extra experience where you go, you pay, you know, $60 extra and just go experience it for the night on this like camp or whatever. Yeah. Or like you do it for one night or something like. But yeah, to have it just this limited weekend and all that. So I'm also like, where's the pool? Like, is there like...
Yeah, well, that's one thing that she said is like, they can't convert it into a regular hotel because it doesn't have any of the amenities of a regular like Disney hotel. There's no pool. There's no fitness center. There's no nothing like that.
But I'm like, if they did it for one night or like a camp or something one day, that would be fun. But not for $6,000 and not for two nights.
Quick question. Where are the bathrooms? Does each room have a bathroom?
Yeah.
Each room has a little tiny bathroom, and then there are like restrooms on the floor and stuff. She mentioned that.
Okay.
So there are bathrooms.
There's no bathrooms in space.
Okay.
I feel like a disrespectful cover is what I thought of it.
Yeah.
I think it was very disrespectful for Disney to present the Star Wars Hotel in the way that they did.
Okay. We feel good. Can I go?
Yeah, you
feel good.
Okay. I'm going to fight for my opportunity to debrief.
Yes. Okay. So, Grasshole of the Week. We're getting to our Grasshole, which is our final segment where we nominate one person or group of people, lovingly or not lovingly, to log off and go touch some grass.
Okay.
So, initially, for this week, when I was going to make the grass hole, the first person that was nominated was a serial tweet stealer who takes viral tweets and repurposed them to her TikTok. Which, you know, it's again
dastardly.
Yeah, dastardly. Again, shitty behavior. People do that. It's like a whole fucking thing. Some people will go on Tumblr, find like the most popular notes and then put them, like repurpose them for TikTok, and it's fucking weird. Whatever. But we had an iconic event happen this weekend that was so emblematic of Twitter, I had to cover it.
Oh my goodness.
Now, earlier you said, which is so funny because I was bringing this up anyway, there's a word for a person who gains popularity on social media for some positive or charming trait that is later revealed to have a distasteful history or to engage in offensive behavior. Mm-hmm. We call that a milkshake duck.
Yeah.
But we don't quite have a word for when there's an innocent tweet or concept And the way people respond to it is so batshit crazy, it darkens the entire post.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So for our very online friends, you know the hell that was unleashed when that woman said she likes to drink coffee with her husband in her garden every morning. Or the other woman who noticed her new neighbors ordered a lot of delivery and she said she decided to do something nice and cook them some chili.
Yes.
Do you remember some of the responses to those iconic tweets?
I remember like the first one, people would be like, well, that must be nice. My life is horrible. My husband's dead. I don't have a husband. And it's okay. And then the chili people were like, what if they're allergic to chili? I can't eat chili because I have a texture problem. And if someone gave me chili, I would be scared. And it's like, okay.
That's what my memory of these responses were. Was that basically
happened? This weekend we had one of those events.
Oh my goodness.
And it all started when a doctor from the United Kingdom, Dr. Ben Besko, who's 33 years old, saw a group of birds. And Tim's a birder, so I need to let you know that they're magpies.
Yeah, beautiful.
Squawking in his garden on Saturday. He saw a group of birds on his garden, and he went out to investigate, and he spotted a fish lying in the grass. He said that he picked up the flapping fish and he found a freezer drawer. So it's basically like the refrigerator, like clear where you put vegetables, the crisper drawer. Right. He took that out of his refrigerator, filled it up with water, and the fish started to swim and it was alive, he said. So Dr. Besko suspected that a bird had picked up the fish from a nearby pond and dropped it while carrying it away.
Sure.
However, he says there's no reasonable ponds close by, so it must have traveled a reasonable distance. The mystery of the goldfish has gone viral on X, formerly known as Twitter, with Dr. Besko's initial post about it gaining over 24 million views, which was crazy.
Okay.
So he went to the nearby shop and purchased, you know, fish chemicals. He purchased a fish tank. And he tweeted like, or he said like, you know, I think it was seconds from death. It's a lucky fish. And, you know, his little setup, I'll just show you a picture of the little setup. It's very cute. There are birds around it. The guy went to go check if the fish was alive. He put in like a little plastic container. It was still alive. So he went to a store and got a cute little fish tank.
First of all, my thought is like, this feels like a guy. The moment I hear he goes to a pet store, I'm like, okay, so this guy started the tweet with like a, let me tell you what happened. Like, is the beginning of this tweet like, here's the scenario, now let me walk you through my adventure. Already, I don't trust that stuff. Already, I'm like, you're farming, you're aware of this platform in the way that it takes away the idea of you just tweeting something fun. You're trying to get people invested in a story. I don't trust you. Number two, a goldfish. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't know where goldfish live in the wild, unless these were like, were able to snap something from a koi fish or a koi pond, potentially, that makes sense. But I am a little like skeptical that like, oh, someone just dropped a fish and it's like a pet fish, so I'm gonna put it in my pet terrarium that I'm just gonna go buy fish. I think this fucker bought a fish.
Let's see if that's where this goes.
So I'll just read you the first. Goldfish do need 30 gallons to live a happy life for 25 years plus. So your new tank won't be cycled. So do keep an eye on the ammonia and nitrate levels, parentheses test kits. You may need to do frequent 10% water changes with tap water conditioner. Somebody else tweets, don't forget to do your water changes. Feed little amounts only 3 to 4 times a week. Dechlorinate your water. Don't rinse filter sponges in tap water. Use old aquarium water. Get a friend for Alice. Oh, because he named the fish Alice. So somebody said, there's another one. Goldfish produce a lot of waste. Please consider getting her a bigger tank in the future. Most goldfish grow to be 8 to 10 inches, but she looks like she might be a common, which get bigger. Something like a 30-gallon is probably more suitable for her size, exclamation point.
This was kind of what I guessed, was that the goldfish experts were going to come in.
Somebody else says, that's such a cute setup. If you're going to keep her, just keep in mind goldfish are a type of carp, and they get fucking massive for no good reason. I think that because of Ben Besko, fish tank sales will go through the roof as people start hoarding ever increasingly bigger fish tanks on the off chance a fish ends up on their lawn. This was all a stunt done by Big Aquarium to drum up sales. Then somebody else wrote, I keep a 180-gallon Peninsula tank in my garage for this very circumstance. I have all the accessories for either salt or fresh water. A stingray could land on my lawn and I'd be capable of proper care. To be ill-prepared for this is just irresponsible. And then somebody else wrote, is the water gluten-free? You know, again, these are the joke responses to some of the things that people were saying. Ben, at first, he tried to be funny about it. He wrote, like, unfortunately, the fish was dead and actually just lying in my back garden. So it's a current situation in a non-cycled tank is pure unadulterated luxury. So he kind of said that, like, at first. And then somebody replied, all you morons, stop it. He's a fucking MAGA. See you next Tuesday. Mm. Farming all of you people who can't be bothered with checking his post. Glad you all crowned him prince already. And the guy's like, I'm from England.
I'm not MAGA
because I'm from England. And then finally, this is what he tweeted. He said, repeat after me. A hastily brought temporary tank is better for a goldfish than lying dead on the grass. So we can discuss.
Yeah.
But personally, I nominated these people because I say they need to go fucking touch grass. But Tim, I feel different opinions and we've heard your different, your final thoughts, your primary thoughts.
My premier thought. First of all, Millie, I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention. I want to apologize for interrupting so many times. It's just because you brought to the table something I feel so passionate about that I knew
this was for you. You know, this is why I picked it. So, and I love the passion. I did say before the thing, you can only have two opinions.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true. But I believe I text you the two opinions I'm bottling up are one about food and one about how people talk about identity.
Okay.
And I'm still figuring out what those are.
So yeah. So no, but what were you going to say? So you feel passionately about fish.
First of all, I'm impressed by people who keep terrarium. I think it's a really hard thing to do. I think there's a lot of science to it. I think like any... you know, anyone who keeps fish or aquatic creatures or like reptiles or stuff like that, that's a lot of know-how you need. You need like, and you need to have
it properly.
To do it properly. And so I think it is like, I don't think it is silly for people to be like, oh, you're telling us a story of triumph, but already just from someone who cares about fish, I'm seeing problems, you know, like, and you are trying to please me by tweeting this, you know, like this, what was the intent of this, if not to please us by a story? And the story has holes to not be pleased by if you care about fish. And by the way, if you don't care about, if you think the people who care about fish are have dismissible views, then who is this for? You know, that's my take number one.
Okay.
I completely agree. Like once that stuff gets out of control and there's more and more passion and more like fuck you energy behind it and more like it's been said, then it's like, what are these people tweeting for? Are they in a terrarium community where it has to be seen that they are the one bash this person? You know, like there's a multiple aspects to that. And then of course, once it gets to that many views, people use controversy to be, oh, this person's a MAGA person. Or there's another reason for you to pay attention to my version of this, which I also think is out of control. Everyone, I think I agree. The totality of this is touch grass, but the totality of this, in my opinion, is also this guy tweeted about this for a reaction.
So you're saying, you're victim blaming right now. You're saying, what was he wearing? You're saying you asked for the smoke. You wanted this, and you got
it. You wanted
it, and now
fish discourse in your feed, and you got fish discourse in your feed.
That's what you're saying.
Well, no, because it's clear he didn't want fish discourse. He wanted funny animal discourse. He wanted
a funny, like, oh my God, this is such a crazy thing.
Yeah.
And he didn't know that fish Twitter was going to get him.
Fish people are serious. Fish people are really serious.
Fish people, bird people, wacky.
Here's my final
Sorry,
thoughts.
Guys.
My final thoughts are, advice I understand. Anger I do not understand. And I also do feel like this is an example of like the most reading things the most like the worst way possible, because to me I'm like, well yeah, he got like he had to run out and get a fish tank. This fish happened upon him.
Yeah.
This doesn't need to be the final form of his fish tank. So to say, the people who are like, oh, you're probably going to need to get a bigger tank eventually and you might want to get da-da-da, That's one thing. But the people who are like, you have abused this fish. It's like, well, this fish has been in here for like 2 days and it's like, it was gonna die. It was almost eaten by a magpie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that is kind of my thing is like, look, advice, whatever. But I'm also like, but this is when you got to do like touch grass. It's like, if you see a thread and you see someone said something similar, that's it. Like, you don't have to add on. And then the abuse, the mega, the anger, the all
the
that
MAGA
stuff.
The MAGA thing is really funny to say about our just random British man. British You're like, man. He's fucking MAGA. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. It's just like, listen, unfortunately, you know, you're going to see opinions. Even if you're like the most knowledgeable fish person, people are still, that's just part of life. People are still going to have tanks that aren't the proper way to do it. And just like, I know, listen, I have a dog and people constantly on Twitter are like, I fucking hate dogs that go to restaurants, or I fucking hate dogs, or I saw an unleashed, like whatever. And like, do I have my opinion? But I'm just like, I have to, part of being a person and having sanity online is like, you don't have to engage in everything, especially if that those conversations are already taking place. And for thousands and thousands of tweets to be like this, it's just like, everyone needs to touch grass.
Sure. Here's my question. Was the first tweet good?
What do you mean? To me, okay, the first tweet, literally, because I pulled it up, because Tim, you feel like you were already off board.
What do I feel?
I think, so I said, so today I found a goldfish on the grass in my back garden. It was alive, I think, and have absolutely no idea where it came from. There's no ponds near anywhere, so I took it inside, ... And that was the first, tweet.
If we get rid of that, so I took it inside, ... If it had just been, there's no ponds around here. Because that frames the scenario and not his action. If we had ended at just like, there's no pond around here, instantly we've got mystery. And the more he does in the response to it is in response to the mystery. I tried. Oh, you're, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to respond. There's no ponds around. I got a smaller one. Yeah, I got a small one. Sorry about that. But because here's what I did next. That's saying, follow me to Pleasure Town, baby.
Can I just say?
Follow me to like apotheosis, like follow me to catharsis. Like, and so then people are going to engage with it. People will engage with that in a way of which, like you are both saying, is uncritical and like is, you know, not in proportion to what is being said. But they are like, oh, so you gave. I have this belief that Reddit Ask Me Anythings has like completely changed all of media, because I think people don't actually want to engage with story for a story's sake, or even experience for experience sake, but people want to engage with story and other people's experiences as an opportunity to debate about what they would do in that scenario. And I think people look at movies like that. I think people look at like,
that's reality TV, like that. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like this is one of those things where people are like, well, if you're giving me the scenario, I'm going to tear it up. This is what we do.
But do you, but it sounds like you think that that's right.
No, I don't think that's right. But I do think that like,
he left the avenue open by having the ...
The moment you start talking about the story, that I was like, I can see versions of this which are inviting people to be like, let me tell you why you're wrong. And I, again, grammatically, I am grammatically,
but I'm just saying, this might be a go touch grass first, because we've had controversial topics on here.
Yeah. At least. Would I have thought the goldfish would be the one.
But the divisive one. We've talked about Nicki Minaj. We've talked about Meek Mill being gay. We talked about a lot of stuff, heavy stuff. And no one has pushed back harder than Tim with the fish. On the goldfish.
I just don't think they're wrong to be like, you need a bigger tank.
Okay, but and just for final thoughts on that, we're not saying they're wrong either. I'm not saying even the first three tweets were wrong. I'm saying 1,000 tweets about that same shit are wrong.
Inevitably,
and
yes.
Also, the people saying animal abuse, calling a MAGA, all that stuff is unnecessary.
Agreed.
And for that reason, they must go touch grass. Wow.
What an episode.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
We traversed the universe. the sea,
the galaxy,
the galaxy.
Wow! Oh my God.
Okay, Tim.
Wait.
Where can we find you? What is
tell people how to follow your podcast. Find you online.
Check out Rude Tales of Magic on the HeadGum Network. We are starring Bears, The Blessing of the Obelisk, next week, if this comes out around that time. Also check out Oh, These Those Stars of Space. Same crew GM'd by Joe Lepore, and it's a Star Trek pastiche.
Wow.
I am Tim Platt. I have an album coming out this year, most likely. My first stand-up comedy album.
Oh, my God.
Which is very musical and character-based.
What is it called? What's the title?
It's called Teeth Like Beak.
Wow.
Yes.
Perfect.
You can follow me on Spotify, where I already have some songs coming out to lead up to the album. Follow me on X, Twitter, at Timothy Platt. On Instagram, it is I Am King Bozo, because I used to have a project where that name was
and
a
then
moniker.
You can't, yeah.
No, I feel like that was your God-given game. And then sure. Are you on TikTok?
I am. It is at, I think it's Timbo Platt, T-I-M-B-E-A-U-X.
Wow.
And I'm on YouTube as The Timbo. I should really sync everything up.
Yeah,
And he's on Reddit Shitty Aquariums.
Yeah.
As moderator.
Well, he has 15,000 alts because he was obviously engaging in the one of those. And that's why he says that they are not grass holes. They are indeed really good.
They are touching more grass than he could ever possibly touch. Fuck, he is personally.
Okay, Elise, we're
going. Oh, guys, you can find me on Instagram at Pandalise and on TikTok at Elise Navidad.
And you can find the podcast at Go Touch Grass Pod on everything. And you can find me at Millie_Tamaris on Instagram and on TikTok. And you can find me at Millie Tamaris on Twitter.
Wonderful. And until next time,
go touch grass.
That was a HeadGum podcast.